Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 65, recorded June 7th, 2011.
All right, everyone. Let's jump in to the water, so to speak.
Ha ha.
First, Carlos mentioned on Facebook that he hadn't listened to episode 65 or 64 yet. Nobody's listened to episode 65 yet.
It's brand new.
But he was hoping we got a beta. For the 5 gallon. He regrettably lost his yellow placot sole that was featured on the Aquarimax page, and he was lucky that. He said he was lucky to have gotten a spawn out of him first, so now he's got third generation fry from him.
Well,
so.
That's cool.
Yeah. So he's a granddaddy. I guess he's a great granddaddy of a fish now.
So Carlos, we didn't get a beta.
Although you probably know that now.
Yes, as we announced, we got some African dwarf frogs, and Russ made a new video for you all.
I did. It was a demonstration of how albino African dwarf frogs are different from African clawed frogs, because many people get them confused, because African clawed frogs have been available in an albino color morph for years and years. I don't even know how long, a long time. Whereas the African dwarf frogs have not been available in albinos until recently. And so there are some people out there who just shut anybody down who says, I found albino African dwarf frogs. And they say, no, those don't exist as a morph. You've got the Xenopus, the African clawed frog, which was the truth for a very long time. It is no longer the truth. So I put that video up to demonstrate, and you can tell by the forelimbs or the fingers, African clawed frogs, the ones that get big, don't have webbed fingers. African dwarf frogs, the ones that stay small, do have webbed fingers. There you go. Really
easy. So
that's
pretty easy.
And you can see it on our video.
Plus you get to see cute froggy pictures.
Yes. All right. So let's move on to the next thing.
Tell us about the darrow worms.
Well, a while ago we had a video and some discussion about darrow worms, and I mentioned that I had put some in with Daphnia and so on. And now the darrow worms are reproducing like crazy. They're crawling up the walls, literally. And I've fed some to the African dwarf frogs and so on. But I'm wondering if there are different species of darrow worms, which seems fairly likely, with different habits, or is it just different conditions that lead to different things that the worms do? For example, when we lived in Hawaii and I was culturing darrow worms, they tended to congregate on the bottom of the culture container in clumps. Now, they tend to congregate at the sides, above the waterline, above the meniscus. So I'm wondering what's going on there.
They were under the water in Hawaii?
They tended to congregate there, yes. They would both, I would see them swimming through the water periodically. I would see them on the glass periodically. But in the culture container, they would congregate at the bottom. And here, they're not congregating in the bottom. They're congregating at the surface. And I'm wondering if that is because they're different species or types, or if they have to do with situation, if the water conditions are conducive more to that or something like that. So that's what I'm wondering. So, if any of you have any observations relating to darrow worms that might illuminate me, let us know. Send us a message or call us or something like that.
Okay, let's move on to Andreika's messages. She's wondering about low-light freshwater plants on pointers, how to keep them happy, especially using LED light. And her Java moss, she says, is not doing well and is asking for tips on that.
Okay, well, let's address the penultimate question first. Okay, that's any pointers for those with the LED light. There are lots of different types of LED light, and in some ways, LED light may be the wave of the future in aquaria, but there are lots of different types, so we need to talk about that.
Different types of LED?
Different types of LED, yes, that you can find in aquaria, different types of setups. Of course, LED stands for light-emitting diode, but there are many different spectra that you can reach, and you can actually, there are certain types that are programmable to emit different spectra of light and all kinds of crazy things. But let's talk about the four basic types of LED light that you might find in aquaria first.
Okay.
The first type is moonlights. That's the first type I ever experimented with. And of course, they're pretty low intensity.
Are those like the black?
They can
black
be kind
lights?
Of. They look kind of
you
like
use
that.
At night,
right.
To kind of a night light in the fish tanks, you can still see them at night.
One that's supposed to simulate the light of the moon, it's kind of that white, moony light. And there's another one that's sort of bluish, and another one that's reddish, so on. But the purpose is to illuminate it at night, right? And some of those are built in. I have a couple of those that are built into high intensity light fixtures. So when the day light is on during the day, and then it switches so the other one's on at night, and you know, different things like that. They're on separate timers. So you've got that kind of LED light, but they really, of course, don't have a very high intensity. It's very, very dim. Then you've got the next highest in intensity, which is basically intended as a replacement for stock lighting. And what I mean by stock lighting, I guess, is lighting that's sold with aquaria. In general, when you buy an aquarium setup, the lighting that comes with it is not intended to be very strong. It's intended to be just strong enough so that you can see the fish easily, but not really strong enough to help most plants grow. Some plants will grow in that, but most plants won't really thrive very well in stock lighting, and generally it amounts to one fluorescent tube.
But some, it's LED?
But these days, some of them are replacing them with an LED.
So the stock light might be fluorescent or it might be LED.
Yes. And of course, the LED has the small diodes in some sort of array. Sometimes it's a line, sometimes it's a grid, whatever. But those, I would say that probably most plants wouldn't do very well with that lighting.
There's just not enough.
There's not enough to have most plants do well with it. There would, I'm sure there are some exceptions, and we'll talk about some of those, but I have one on that, what is it called, the Tetra Aqua Wonders, I think it is, the 1.25 gallon tank. It has a little array of maybe 16 small LEDs on it, 4x4, in an array, and the light's really pretty dim. It's almost as dim as a nightlight, and some really, really low light plants might do okay with it, but it's mostly just for lighting up the
aquarium
so you
critters.
Can see what's in it. Yeah, and then we'll move on to the next stage of LED lighting, you might say, where they're actually intended to illuminate a freshwater tank or maybe a saltwater fish-only tank just enough that some of the low to medium light plants will do fine, but it's not a really high-intensity lamp. If you have one of those, your plants could probably do fairly well if you're catering to low light plants. I know Marineland has put out a system that comes in several sizes of this type that will allow you to grow fairly low light plants. And it also kind of produces, I think this is the one, produces glitter lines, which are basically
glitter lines?
They catch the waves or the turbulence at the surface of the water.
Mm-hmm.
The LEDs will catch that, and so you see sort of a wave motion on the surfaces in the aquarium because of the way the light is
hitting. So it looks kind of like when sunlight hits a stream or something and it does that sparkly bit.
And you see those glittery bits on the bottom of the stream or bottom of the sand in the ocean or whatever.
We should get some of those. I like that idea.
Those are kind of nice. And then there's the final category, and that is high-intensity LED lighting, which might be intended for planted aquaria. It might be intended for a reef. And these are really strong. Some of these can be programmed so that they gradually increase in the morning, so they simulate dawn.
Like the sun rising.
And gradually decrease, exactly, just like the dawn and the dusk. And they can come in many different spectra, so freshwater spectra for growing plants, ideal for that. Saltwater spectrum, ideal for reef applications, you know, growing photosynthetic corals and other organisms like that. And some of them you can actually program, so it could be, you could use it as a freshwater plant growing light, and then you could program it differently and use it for a reef light. So those are very expensive, of course. Some of the more expensive lighting around, and I'm sure that's probably not what you have with this freshwater tank. So the bad news is it might not be the best light to grow plants, depending on which one of these you have. But the good news is some of the really low-light plants might do okay anyway. So I'm expecting you probably have the second category here, the stock lighting. But if you have any further information about that, you can let us know, and we may be able to help you a little bit more as far as that goes. So let's talk about your other question, which was basically the top low-light freshwater plants and specifically the tip about your Java moss. So why don't we talk about Java moss last so we can really get into that, and we'll go to some of the other top low-light freshwater plants. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about Java fern.
Java fern.
What do you think about Java fern?
What do I think about Java fern?
Yeah.
It's Java and ferny.
Okay, well that was non-committal. But here we go. Java fern is a great aquarium plant. We did actually do a podcast about that a long time ago, so you can go back into our archives and find it. But Java fern is great for several reasons. One, it really doesn't require very high light, and it will grow in almost any temperature that is conducive to keeping fish. It doesn't need to be planted in a deep, rich substrate or anything like that. Doesn't need
you
special.
Just put it in the gravel like normal gravel?
Actually,
or?
No, you don't put it in the gravel. That's an interesting thing. Java fern is a true fern. It actually has coiled fiddle heads, just like other ferns,
mm-hmm.
and so on. But it can be aquatic. It can also live on land in very damp situations, like near a waterfall or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't root in the conventional sense that a lot of terrestrial plants we're familiar with. It does have roots, but it has an additional structure. You think of a Java fern as having three basic structures. Okay, it's got its leaves, it's got its roots, and in between it has rhizomes.
Are they creeping rhizomes?
They are creeping rhizomes.
That's fun to say. We could make like a fish tank horror movie for Halloween called
Creeping Rhizomes at Midnight or
something. Like creeping
that.
Rhizomes from the Black Lagoon.
There you go. And basically, these rhizomes are like a thick, fleshy stem, and they throw out both roots and leaves, and they are, you can take a piece of a rhizome, even if it doesn't have any roots or leaves on it, and set it in appropriate conditions, and it will start to throw out roots and leaves and,
wow.
and reproduce. So you can almost think of it as the central part of the plant. It doesn't like to be buried. Many people make the mistake of burying the rhizome because it looks something like a root, and then the plant can die. It can rot
so
and die.
So if you're bringing home Java fern from the pet store,
yes,
do you just kind of gently put it into the place where you want it to be, or should you put some gravel around it to kind of anchor it, or how do you do it?
Well, there are several ways to do it. One way, you can just drop it in the tank and let it float around until it hits someplace. And if
but that might not be where you want it to
be. That might not be where you want it. But it can actually survive and even thrive for months without being planted.
Okay.
Okay, but it's usually not very attractive that way. It's not the best. Ideally, you will attach it to some sort of substrate, like a piece of lava rock or a piece of driftwood, which
mm-hmm.
you can
what
do.
What do you attach it with?
I use rubber bands, just lightly.
Okay.
You don't want to make it too tight, or you know, you can choke the rhizome a little bit. But if it's just sort of snug but not too tight, you can attach it to a piece of lava rock, which is one of my favorites, or a piece of driftwood. You can also use black cotton thread and just wrap it around, you know, something that attaches. If you put cotton thread in, the thread will eventually rot away, and by the time it has, the roots will be attached. With rubber bands,
and then you don't have to see them.
Then you don't
anymore.
Have to see it, and the black cotton thread doesn't really show up that well mm-hmm. anyway, so it's kind of nice. A rubber band is generally uglier,
and it's not going to decompose.
It's not going to decompose very readily in the tank, and fish can actually choke on it. I had one fish swallow one, and it went all the way through its digestive tract. It was hanging out of its mouth and coming out the other end at the
well,
same
that's
time.
Fun.
And I snipped off
fishy.
The ends, and it was able to get the rest of it out.
That's good.
But I don't recommend, you know, leaving rubber bands in there too long. But if you attach it with a rubber band after a few weeks, depending on the conditions, if it's growing well, within a few weeks, it will have attached to the substrate. As long as it's rough enough, it needs, you know, something entirely smooth like a marble would probably not work very well. But
something with some
texture.
Texture to grab onto.
Yeah. That's why I like lava rock or driftwood. They work great.
So Java fern, you don't plant like a normal plant. You just attach it to something.
Right. And then get rid of the rubber band after, you know, you clip it off or whatever.
On that note, let's take a break. This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it? Okay, we're back.
Okay, so we still haven't concluded really with Java fern yet. Those are the basics, but a couple other things. If leaves start to blacken on it, which is not unusual for a few of the leaves to start blackening with age, for example, you can actually detach that leaf and let it float up to the top of the aquarium, and you will get baby plants coming off of there.
Oh, neat.
So once
it's like a phoenix.
Yeah, it's kind of rising from the ashes there. That makes sense. And that's one way to get new plants, and once they get big enough, you just kind of gently pull them off of the blackened leaf, and you can attach them to something and then keep the cycle going. You can also just divide the rhizome and keep the leaves attached to the part, you know, you clip it, or just even you can pull it apart if you're gentle, and then you'll have two plants, and it'll just keep going. So I started out with some Java fern a long, long time ago. And I have had tanks and tanks and tanks and tanks of full of it and sold chunks and chunks and chunks and chunks of it. And I still have...
Because it just keeps going. It
just keeps going like that. It's kind of nice. So you also want to make sure that you don't have any pests that eat it, like amphipods. But if you keep fish that are large enough in the tank with it, they'll take care of the amphipods. There are some fish that nibble on plants that really don't do much to Java fern because their leaves are kind of tough. So the most dedicated plant eaters will still eat it. But some of those others that will just nibble on soft plants will not really bother Java fern. So, let's see. A few more comments on Java fern. Yeah, we mentioned that leaves were tough, so it comes in a lot of different varieties, too. You can get Java fern, just the normal Java fern, that has leaves of moderate width and length. You can get narrow leaf or needle leaf Java fern, which is one of the cultivars that I have, where the leaves are about at max when they're really growing really well, maybe a centimeter in width, but they can be up to 16 inches long. So they're much thinner and grass-like almost. And then one of my very favorites is lace Java fern, which looks like antlers. It's the leaf tips branch out crazily, and so those are fun. And then there are many others too. So if you're interested in that, look into it. It's really easy to keep. I've kept them in small, unfiltered 2-gallon tanks with abeta, for example, and in much larger tanks up to 55 gallons, and they'll do well in almost any situation. So that's a great low-light plant. You can grow them even in room light, as long as the room light is reasonable. You know, not in a basement with no windows, probably, but even in a room without particularly bright light, they will grow slowly.
So, like, without a light on the tank, just ambient light. Wow.
That tank we set up for Sun and Sue, you know, in Hawaii, I gave them some lace Java fern, and it went fine for months with just room light.
Nice.
And the windows in those apartments weren't very good.
No.
But it worked fine. Then, let's go to Anubias. Now, Anubias has the same sort of general arrangement. It's not a fern. It's a true flowering plant. And it will flower in the aquarium for you regularly.
They look a little bit like lilies.
Yeah, they're actually related to lilies. Mm-hmm. And they've got lily-shaped flowers, smaller, not very showy, but we've got how many flowers in the tank right now? Right here,
four or five, yeah.
Yeah, they'll flower. And they look vaguely like a philodendron, sort of. They have a rhizome, too, a creeping rhizome that doesn't like to be buried. Their roots like to be attached to a substrate the same way that Java fern's roots do.
So you would, if you were adding Anubias to your tank, you would do the same thing that you would for Java fern, just with the thread or the rubber band?
Right. And they grow very slowly. If anything, they need even less light than Java fern. they can grow in almost no light. I mean, you know, they need some, but very, very low light. What will happen is that their leaves will become smaller in size.
With less light.
And they will grow more slowly, but they will still grow and they'll stay green. They're amazing. The only thing is that if you have too much light, they will get algae all over their leaves, and that's not very attractive.
Mm-hmm.
So you can even shade them with other plants or with other decorations and let them grow there, and it works nicely. Just don't bury the rhizome, once again, like Java fern. But Anubias are great. Anubias bartieri, I think, is what most people call it, or Anubias nana bartieri. It's a small variety, small-leaved variety. There are more than one species of Anubias, but that particular variety tends to stay fairly small with the leaves fairly low to the ground. The petiole, or the stem of the leaf, so to speak, stays shorter. And then there are other varieties that grow too big for aquaria, for most aquaria anyway.
Like you would put them in a pond or something?
Yeah, they're gigantic. They wouldn't do well in a temperate pond, but yeah, they're huge. And Anubias are actually one of those plants that will also grow on land if it's very, very humid, like in a terrarium with really, really high humidity. But their leaves will die very quickly if they're out of water and out of a humid environment. Then let's move on to Ceratophyllum. That one is also known as hornwort.
Ah.
Or foxtail.
That's what does that one look like?
A great plant. It looks vaguely like a fox's tail. Sort of bushy, green, cylindrical in cross section, and with finely branched leaves. They're kind of brittle. It's a stem plant that you can allow to float at the top of your tank, if you'd like to. It doesn't...
Like if you're providing cover for something that
right.
likes to swim up there?
Like live bear babies or different things like that, or our rainbow fish spawn in it all the time.
Okay.
It's a great plant because when it floats at the surface, it's right up next to your light, so even if you have low light, it's making the most of it.
It's getting plenty of it.
Right. And it's also good at combating algae. If you get a lot of Ceratophyllum going early on, it actually produces algicides, natural algicides, and
wow.
will help fight against algae. And it's also, of course, drawing up nutrients that the algae is not getting if the Ceratophyllum's there. You wouldn't want to add Ceratophyllum necessarily to a tank where algae is running rampant, because it would probably just get covered by algae itself.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's there first, it will start to outcompete the algae.
Keep it away.
Right. Help stave it off. It's a great plant. You can root it. If you do, you'll need a little bit higher light than you would if you just let it float. But it'll do fine with just really stock lighting.
So that one, you can plant it like a normal plant in your substrate? You don't have
you
to
can.
Attach it to something?
You can. It doesn't root exceptionally well, but it will throw out
mm-hmm.
a few roots if you plant it. Just strip off some of the lower leaves, but keep the stem.
Mm-hmm.
And plant that stem. And then if you do, this is the secret, clip it religiously. Every week,
just from
trim
the top.
It back several inches. Pinch it back the tops, yeah. A couple inches of every branching tip from the top, and you'll get a really bushy, almost Christmas tree-looking sort of thing after a while.
Okay.
And that's a good way to keep it looking good. Otherwise, it will get very leggy and just work its way to the surface. But it does need a little bit more light than the other plants. Then you get water sprite is a great one. It's almost a weed. It is another true fern, and it will grow at the surface. It will grow underwater, but it does fine with low light. If you grow it in really low light in an aquarium, it will tend to be very bushy and lacy. That's what I've heard. I have grown it in moderately lit aquariums, planted underneath, and it just becomes a big jungle. I've also grown it at the surface, where it will eventually just cover the surface if allowed to do so. And any little bit of a leaf, a small particle of a leaf, is enough to grow a new plant. It will start producing plantlets on it.
And that's why it's almost a weed.
Yes.
So if you don't want it, it's really hard to get rid of.
Yeah, you can get rid of almost all of it and then find you have another bit somewhere. But that's okay, because it's easy to feed to a goldfish or something like that. They'll eat it. It's good for them. And it's great for, you know, it's a nitrate sponge. Or I should say ammonium sponge. It's probably mostly sucking up ammonium, but it will remove fish waste from the water.
That's good.
They use it as a food quite effectively and quickly. So that's one. You will need to remove chunks of it regularly if it's doing well, and it probably will do fairly well. And it is illegal in some states, so be careful about that.
So check your regulations.
Yeah, don't order any online if it's illegal in your state, because you'll probably end up getting it, and then that's not good. So there's water sprite. I don't know what else to say about water sprite, except that its roots are It will fill the water column with its roots and leaves and so on, and those make great cover and spawning sites for a lot of fish, too. And let's see. Let's do our last one for today. We're doing five plants today. We could do others, but we're going to focus on these five, is Java moss.
Yay!
Now, Java moss, Andreka mentioned that she had some and that it wasn't doing so hot. And there could be a couple of reasons for that. So let's look at what they could be. One is that the temperature could be fairly high in the aquarium. Now, there are probably dozens of species of mosses in aquaria that are masquerading as Java moss. It's because if people have a moss and they don't know what to call it, they call it Java moss. And I think I've had two or three species of moss myself that were labeled, no, three or four species of moss that were labeled or identified as Java moss when I got them, but weren't. At least most of them weren't. So, and there are many other kinds of mosses that are identified in aquaria that are not Java moss. But anyway, most of the Java moss types, the true Java moss, likes lower temperatures. If you're growing it between 70 and 74 degrees, it'll probably be really happy. If it's above 74 degrees, it won't grow very fast. If it's grew above 78 or 80, it probably won't grow fast at all. It'll grow extremely slowly. But if you keep it at fairly low temperatures, it will grow pretty fast. I've got a lot of it growing here in this 55. I started out with just a little bit. And it's been almost a year since I set up this aquarium, but I've had to remove chunks of Java moss on several occasions. And it's just got a 1 48-watt strip bulb, so I'm getting less than 1 watt per gallon in the aquarium.
Is that fluorescent?
It's fairly tall. Or yeah, that's normal output fluorescent. I think it's 48 watts in a 55 gallon, so less than one watt per gallon, but it's doing great. It's growing fast. And it's a lovely place for all the fish and shrimp to hang out. Yeah. So, lower temperatures, in general, are good for it. But there are other mosses that, like I say, are masquerading as Java moss that might do great at 78 or 80. But in general, mosses tend to do better at lower temperatures. Then, there are chemicals that can harm them. If you're using fish medications, some of them can damage Java moss. So if you have been using any fish medications, that might be an issue. Salt in large quantities, you know, can damage it. Java moss is one of the plants that can do fine in low density brackish water. Not in really, really brackish water with a lot of salt in it, but with a little bit of salt.
Now, what kind of situation would there be a high amount of salt in a freshwater tank? Well, what would people put that in there for?
Some people put it in when they're trying to deal with nitrite toxicity or when they have certain fish like mollies that, you know, like water with a little salt in it. Not all mollies necessarily need it. It depends on who you're talking to, but certain fish do better with salt. And so some people will keep Java moss in there, or they just want to set up a brackish water tank with real brackish water fish, and they want plants in it, and there are only a few plants that can do well on Java moss is one of them, as long as the salt's not too intense. But that could be something. Another thing is, if you obtained the moss and it was packed wet in a bag and shipped to you wet, it may have actually rotted. The best way to ship moss is not dry, but just damp, barely damp.
Like damp in a paper plastic towel bag. Kind of thing?
Or? Yeah, or even less. I just usually pack moss in a bag. That I pull it out of the tank, shake it off a little bit so that it's not dripping, put it in a bag and seal it. So it's not, there's no standing water, very little, maybe a few drops of standing water in the bag, and it does fine. It can last for months that way, literally.
Wow.
But if it's packed in water, it won't. And you might get some that looks alive, but really is already on its way out by the time you put it in your tank, so it's doomed. If it's packed when it's too wet. I've had that happen. I had that happen once. Somebody sent it to me like that. But otherwise, Java moss is really, really hardy. It will grow in room light. It will grow in a lot of different situations. It doesn't need a substrate. It has something, not a rhizome, but a rhizoid, which is sort of like a primitive mossy root that it will attach to substrates with. So you can do the same thing
with Java moss.
No, but you can attach it to driftwood or rocks or whatever if you'd like to. And in some cases, it'll even attach to scratches in the glass. It will attach to gravel in the tank and so on. So I'm a little bit puzzled if there's any other information you have about your moss, if it looks like it's being picked on, it's being nibbled at. Amphipods will eat it. They'll eat it like crazy, and so will certain fish like Siamese algae eaters, goldfish will eat it, but I don't think you have either of those. A mono shrimp will eat it. You do have a mono shrimp.
Oh.
A mono shrimp will eat Java moss. So there's an issue. I should have thought of that before. But at least I thought of it now. So that may be an issue if it looks like it's disappearing or that the little leaflets are coming off of the fronds. I bet it's an Amano shrimp issue. So that's one idea for you. All right. I think that's about it for now.
Yep.
If you really want some more Java moss, let us know. We've got plenty.
We got lots.
We'll get you some. Okay. And we could probably send it to you free even because, you know, you can go first class with no problem. We could do that. Let us know if you want some. We'll send you some more. Okay. Best fishes, everyone.
See you next week.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.